So tonight's talk is probably one of those ones that will get a lot of views. And I just want to say up front, thank you to everyone that's been watching and joining in these meditations. We usually get a couple, at least we get thousands of viewers. And so it's been really wonderful to share this way. So I hope that you are benefiting from it. Our reading tonight comes from the Napata Sutra, which is an ancient tome of the Buddhist tradition. And these are words that are ascribed to Buddha Shakyamuni. Whatever precious jewel there is in the heavenly worlds, there is nothing comparable to one who is awakened. So the questioner, and this one was not that long ago, it was one of those questions that I get quite often, and it was basically, dear sensei, what's the purpose of life? Or sometimes it's couched as, what's the purpose of my life? So I'm going to attempt to address that question, that big, big question. Tonight. And one of the things I'd like to clarify as we go forward is that it's really important to define your terms. So before you try to answer a question, whether it's a question that is offered to you or it is something that you think of yourself, it's really fundamental that you define what you mean by the term. And if you don't do that, it's pretty hard to get any kind of solid practice from it. So when I look at the word purpose and try to understand what that means, usually the word purpose is associated with meaning. Like, what's the meaning of my life? And so I'm going to talk about both of those terms and how I see them. So I think the purpose, you know, when you think of it in a practical way, what is the purpose of a mala? Right? It seems almost obscene to ask that question. And something is inherently beautiful. But it has a purpose, if you will, pragmatically, in that it serves as a symbol of our practice. It can be drawn through the fingers, counting the beads, if one needs to in meditation. And it can be just run through the fingers as a way to relax the mind. So we could say that it has a purpose, but in and of itself, what is it? So this is key to understanding what I'm going to share today, because this itself is just this. We could talk about the beads and what they're made of. We could talk about most of the beads are black, some of the beads are clear. We could talk about the tassel. We could talk about the big bead and the three beads, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. But those are things that we apply to it. What's interesting today is this form is a very popular piece of jewelry. So you see lots of people making these that have absolutely no understanding whatsoever what they represent to us. So the purpose of something, and this is important, is really not so much what it is, but how it's applied. Okay? So when we think about that, and reflect on that, here's a statement that I want to make very clear. That purpose is not a plan. Purpose is not a plan. No. I'm talking about from our perspective, from the Buddhist perspective of Sensei Tony. A purpose is not a plan. But often, that's how we relate to each other. If something has a purpose, it's part of some plan. Now, I'm not saying that one can't have a practical sense of that. Like I can say about this mala, that the plan of this mala is to use it for those things that I mentioned earlier. But it's not really its purpose. Because the purpose of something is talking about something else altogether. So when I think of the word purpose, I don't think of plan, such as a design. But I think of it as path. In Sanskrit, marga. Now, in the Buddhist tradition, we talk about the path. And that's one of the main symbols that the Buddha used to describe this practice. And so, you know, in some traditions, they have the Eightfold Path, right, of practice that leads to the release from suffering. So path is what I think of when I relate it to the word purpose. Because the conventional idea of the word purpose is that there's a design and there's a plan. That's its purpose. But my understanding is that purpose is path. And that your purpose can only be revealed by walking your own path. Let me try to help describe this a little more deeply. The reason for being in Buddhism is to relieve suffering. That's our raison d'etre. That's the reason we do everything that we do. Because ultimately, we want to help relieve people from suffering. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is we want people to have their own personal experience of nirvana. So it's not just relieving suffering. It's the experience, the personal experience of nirvana. And it's not an either or, it's a both and. That one, when one is relieved of suffering, one begins to taste nirvana. Now, nirvana is often talked about in two ways. In one sense, nirvana is a state, like a state of being or a state of mind. And in that sense, nirvana typically is talked about a state of complete happiness, complete peace, complete inner freedom, full awakening, and understanding. That's how nirvana is talked about as far as it being a state of mind, a state of being. The other aspect of nirvana is, you might say, the action aspect. So one is the being aspect and the other is the becoming aspect. The becoming aspect is known as bliss. Bliss. So that nirvana is the state of this complete sense of happiness and inner peace, but it is also the experience of bliss. Now, the bliss of nirvana can only be experienced through action. And so, through the action of the second principle of oneness, creativity, there is an enjoyment and a receding of negativity. And there is a flourishing and a falling forward and a fulfillment of the idea that everything is one. Positivity is not something that one has to do forcefully, which can end up in some ridiculous Pollyannish approach. positivity is already there when the negativity recedes. And when the negativity recedes, the sense of separation is receding. So that you are not my enemy. You become my friend. You become a part of me. And so nirvana has both qualities to it. The state of being, which is complete happiness, complete harmony, complete inner freedom. And it has the action aspect of bliss. That's how it's described. And that's how it's experienced. Now, let's get back briefly for a moment to the definition that is sometimes used for purpose, which is the idea of meaning. And people will ask me, they will say, well, you know, Sensei, what is the purpose of life? And therefore they mean, what is the meaning of life? And people say that a lot, right? They want to know what the meaning is. Well, our approach is somewhat paradoxical, because on the one hand, we don't believe that life has a purpose or a plan. Let me say that again. I do not believe that life has a purpose or a plan. And therefore, I do not believe that life has an inherent meaning. If you mean by that a plan, because in that sense then it's all done. There's no freedom. You've closed it off, you've categorized it, and you've put it in a box. And then you idolize it, it becomes idolatry. That is not the way we see things. And I don't even think that people really are looking for a meaning of life. I think what people are really looking for is the experience of nirvana, which is freedom from suffering and the action of bliss. Because I believe in that action of bliss, what we really want is we want an experience. We don't want an intellectual meaning. We want an experience. We want to experience in this physical form that we embody, this manifestation of emptiness, of shunyata. We want to experience the rapture, the bliss of being alive. That's what we're looking for. Not some intellectual description, but an experience. So I would say that life has no meaning. If you're going to talk about life as having a plan, a purpose that's inherent to it. Whatever meaning that there is in life, whatever meaning there is in life, it's what we bring to it. It's what a conscious, sentient being brings to it. And that path is not preordained or predestined. There's no kismet here. There's no karma that you have to ultimately fulfill in some predestined sense. The meaning of life is what you bring to it. That's how meaning happens. That's how it occurs. In some ways, it's meaningless to ask that question. A little play on it. Because you're the answer. When someone wants to know what the meaning of your life is, you're the answer. Nobody else can define that for you. Nobody else can tell you what that is except you. And so all this looking to try to find it somewhere else, or to have somebody else tell us what it is, it's a waste of time. And then you're playing somebody else's game. You're not really freely living out of your own path. You're trying to pretend that you're walking somewhere. And what does that mean? Sometimes what that means is that in order to do this, you may have to let go of the life that you've planned. And we all know that. We all have circumstances where we had a plan set up and we thought it was going to go a certain way and it didn't work. We have to learn to let go of the idea of a plan and realize that our purpose is our path. It's the path. And I will say this, knowing what your path is, well, my path is nirvana. That's my path. Now, my path is not your path. My path is not the path of Shakyamuni. He had to walk and live his life. I have to walk and live my life, as do you. And no one in this practice is calling you to live somebody else's life. Shakyamuni's life just serves as a sort of mythic narrative to help us understand the hero's journey. But ultimately, it's about the action of nirvana. It's about experiencing the bliss of the action. And I will say this, that if you do not follow your own path, you will never be fulfilled. You will never have that sense of that experience of nirvana. And it's tricky, you know, because there's lots of ways that things get all laid out for us. And it becomes very easy to think at some stage or whatever that it's all planned out. I don't think so. It's not my experience. So I've found that most of my plans haven't worked out very well. Now, does that mean I never, you know, try to go from point A to point B? If I'm traveling from here down to New Jersey to visit Cape May, do I have directions? Sure, you have directions. But, you know, sometimes the most fun is getting lost. But if you do decide to follow that path of nirvana, that path of bliss, then everything for you will make sense. And it won't make sense in a way that you're foretelling the future of some prophecy. It'll make sense right now. It'll make sense in this moment. When we think about life, and this is critical in understanding this meaning that I'm trying to convey. Life is somewhat terrible. Existence is harsh. People often ask me to sort of sum up the call of the Buddha. And I say it is that life is rough, man. Life is hard. But one can choose to live nobly. And it is a choice. It's not something anybody else can do for you. It's not something that anyone else, no matter how well they want to, can do. Only you can. I don't believe personally that there is any purpose to life, to the universe, on an elemental level. But I do believe that it does, as an emanation of the actualization of your path. So when I say elemental, I mean all the stuff that's here. All, you know, let's go into the cosmic perspective. All the billions of years that have led to this moment in your life, there was a lot of randomness. And see, that's something else people confuse. The idea that randomness is somehow equates with there's no meaning. But once one understands that at an elemental level, there is none. Things are just doing their thing. There is no purpose or meaning except at that emanation level. Emanation. The energy that's created by the actualization of your path. Emanation is the energy of the actualization of your path. On that level, there is profound meaning, both simple, subtle, and deep. In the actualization of your path, of your life, there is incredible meaning. But you're creating. And you don't create it alone. The elemental's there. The elemental's a part of it. But it's what the sentient being does with the elemental. The emanation is what gives it purpose or meaning. And so that's why there can't be an inherent plan. It has to be discovered. That's the freedom that we have. And once we start to get this, once we start to understand it, well, then we can say things. Well, obviously, that's the way oneness intended. I can say that. I mean, if you want to take the word oneness away and use the word God, use the word God. Then you can say, well, that's the way God intended it. That's the way oneness intended it, because you are oneness. You are the particular expression of oneness that is so unique that nothing like you exists in this universe or ever will again. So what about this path? What about this path and this idea of happiness? I believe that it means to keep your mind on the moments when you feel most happy. And that doesn't mean necessarily when you're excited or thrilled, but when you're really happy. And when you experience those deep moments of that, and we all have. We all have. We knew them as children. When we become adults, things get complicated. But there's a reason why the wisdom traditions of the world, of humans, has always referred to the idea of being able to return to the insight of that mind that we had as a little one. In the Christian tradition, it says, have the faith like a little child. And it's understood in the context of I have put away childish things. So it's understood that this is an attitude, an openness, not trying to return to some sort of youthful idolatry. And in Buddhism, Shakyamuni himself, when he was struggling to discover the meaning of life for himself and what and how could one relieve suffering that was so universal, he remembered when he was a small child, sitting under an apple tree, watching his father, Suddhodana, do the ceremonial opening of the planting season. And he remembered the simplicity and the joy of that experience. And that's what led him to sit under that Bodhi tree, to be the pioneer of our faith. This past week, my wife and I went back to where I grew up. And I say I grew up because I went to 9 different schools growing up. But this was a place that I spent the most time from around 5th grade to about 10th grade. And it's Somerset, Pennsylvania. And so my wife and I, celebrating our 37th anniversary of our first date, went to Somerset. And we took a walk down this alley that was behind my house. And when I was a kid, this alley was the universe. And of course, looking at it now, it doesn't seem that big. But back then, it was the whole universe. And I remember we walked by this old pine tree that was there before I was born. And it'll probably be there long after I have departed this realm. And I remember that tree, this sweet experience as a boy, taking my hardcover version of Lord of the Rings and planning out my days where I would go and sit underneath that tree and read the adventures of Tolkien. So sweet. And there was a loveliness then. I didn't worry about things then. Oh, sure, I'm sure I had worries, right? The worries of a 10-year-old. But it wasn't so complicated. I spent more time playing. I spent more time imagining. I spent more time laughing. So to me, just like Shakyamuni, that's it. That's it, man. And that happiness, however you experience that, however you do some self-analysis and figure out what that was for you, stay with it. Stay with it. No matter what anyone tells you. And I know we all say that, it's so easy to say, but let me say it again. Stay with it no matter what anyone tells you. Anyone. Because when you are on your path, you're following that bliss. You're experiencing that bliss. You're experiencing that nirvana. And you become a partner with the universe. You know, the elemental part that's all sort of like random, just like ink, or if you're a painter, right? It's just there, you know, and you got to do something with it to make something out of it, to create something. That's the universe, man. The elemental and the emanation. On an elemental level, it's just stuff. It's just colors. But in the emanation level, you as the artist, you as the creator, you make something out of it. That's the key. It's not an either or. you, the creator, and the elemental. If the elemental and the emanation is one. And when you do this, I like mathematical formulas. I think of it as the idea of being a partner with the universe, the elemental with the emanation. I think of it as 0 + 1 = 1-ness. The 0 representing the potential of the elemental. Shunya, spaciousness, emptiness. The elemental, the randomness. Randomness is a feature of creation. Without randomness, there cannot be creation. Randomness is a gift, just like the idea there's no plan. Your purpose is your path. Your path is your purpose. 0 + 1 = 1. And here's the thing. Obviously, I can talk about this tonight, you know. But doing it, acting on it, takes courage. It does. You know what I think a big part of courage is? Realizing you've got nothing to lose. Because it's all going to be taken away from you. Everything I love, everything I hold precious, will go away. Including me. This is pretty precious to me. It's going to go away. It's starting to break down already. That's not where it comes from. Where it comes from is the courage of the realization. Shoot, man. Like my grandfather used to say, life's too short and life's too long. Do it. And I get it. Oh, believe me, there's nobody that's more sentimental than I am. I'm a sentimental soul. I have a hard time with things that I feel a sentimental attachment. But I know every sentimental attachment I have is just another koan, just another way for me to wrestle with this reality. And so I do. And I will say this, that once you make that commitment to your path, and until then, there's always a hesitancy, right? There's a hesitancy. There's a chance to draw back, you know? And all of that, though, is always ineffective. It's always ineffective. There's an old samurai saying, don't draw the sword unless you're going to use it. But our life is a drawn sword. We might think it's sheathed, but that's an illusion. So let me finish with a quote by Goethe, the great German philosopher. And this is why I actually have framed. The moment one definitely commits oneself to their path, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that never otherwise would have occurred. Unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed, would have come his way. Blessings on your own path. That's why we're here to help. The nice thing to know is you're not alone. You're not alone.